a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the Emden Studios. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side of the glass, the 9 o'clock hour every Thursday. It's dedicated to the MGO Blog Roundtable. Guys come in every day. We chop it up. Sometimes we talk about sports. Sometimes we talk about sharks. We always have fun.
You always have fun.
Most of the time have fun.
Right. From MGO Blog, Brian Cook. How you doing this morning?
I'm good.
That's good, man. Good to see you. Good to see you doing well. Ed Fang from the Power Rank. Ed, what are you up to these days?
Oh, thanks for asking, Sam. I actually got a special podcast out. It's a storytelling sports podcast. I think of it as Moneyball meets This American Life. Hired an audio producer to help me tell the story about how to make March Madness predictions, and it kind of takes you on the journey from skeptic who doesn't think that it can be predicted at all to, you know, the fact that it can be predicted, and you can do that in a way that can help you win your pool. So you can get it on iTunes. My podcast is called The Football Analytics Show, and if I ever asked you for 15 minutes of your time, I would ask it for this episode.
Gotcha. All right.
And Ira helped. That's why it's so good.
There you go. I wouldn't say that, but okay. I did. I helped, but the good part is not because of me.
Joining us on the phones as he does every week from Hawaii, Craig Ross. Craig, how you doing this morning?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. I've come out of retirement, and I'm playing some City League basketball. And
wow!
In honor of all of you guys, I shot my first free throw last week, right-handed. And
I'm left-handed, Craig.
Oh, I shot it left-handed. Then.
Thank you.
Sorry. I'm also calling you Bill Kimmel. Yeah, and so I'm doing the. I give new meaning to the word slow. I'm also doing a lot of research for this book that Seth Fisher has convinced me to do on pre-1900 football, and I'm looking in the 1883 New York Times and the Ann Arbor Argonaut about a Harvard Michigan game in 1883, and in it, the New York Times refers to Horace Prettyman as Horace Pretty Mad routinely, which I thought was very, very
on
amusing.
Purpose, if you read,
I'm not sure, but the game recounts in the Argonaut and the Times couldn't be more different. You wouldn't know it was even the same game. In fact, as often back then, there was disputes about who won and what the score was. but yeah, in the New York Times, Horace Prettyman became Horace Pretty Mad. Pretty amusing.
All right. So. Well, guys, it was pretty amusing last week, pretty entertaining last week to see Michigan just drop the hammer on Maryland. You know, we talked about the scenarios for Michigan to move up to the fourth seed, and we were obviously Michigan had to win both of its games. It didn't happen that they moved up because Nebraska wound up winning their game. But, man, they dispatched of Maryland in an easier fashion than I think many of us here predicted.
Yeah, and on our podcast, we were talking about how we need to get Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman a new accessory every game, like a novelty cowboy hat, like a Flavor Flav clock, and just like pile them on until he's Kemba Walker, basically, and that's our plan.
Yeah, well, the specs, I don't know what it was that got him going, but he has beeline said you're doing a DeWalt impersonation, and that's kind of the switch that he seemingly has flipped here lately.
Yeah, and that was the continuation of a trend where he's been, you know, a 16% usage guy basically his whole career, and over the last month he got to 20, which is a pretty big leap. And since he's Michigan's probably most efficient offensive player, definitely their best shot creator, mm-hmm. like that's something that Michigan needs. And then he got to 41 against Maryland, which is not sustainable. But like, if he could consistently get into that like Derek Walton 24 to 28 range, that takes a lot of burden off Charles Matthews. It takes a lot of burden off Duncan Robinson if he's getting checked real tight. It's a, you know, if Michigan is going to be, you know, take it to another level in the postseason, I think it's because Rockman is doing that personally.
You know, the other thing that jumped out in this game, and, you know, I want to throw this at you guys. The audience, I don't know if this is the right audience to ask this question, but are you – and the reason why I say that because you guys are numbers guys.
Hey, man, I watch the games.
I mean, but my
– Right,
my,
impassioned.
My, you have an, an appreciation for analytics, for the numbers. I ask this question this way because the numbers say Michigan is a really good defensive team. Mm-hmm. My question to you guys is Michigan really as good as the numbers suggest they are?
Yes. What, I mean,
what
I,
would you, what? So I, are you I, saying I, that they just got lucky?
No. I'm saying is it a function of the league that they play in? I mean, are we?
Well, it's supposed to be all adjusted for that kind of
thing.
Yeah,
those numbers take into account that you're not playing, you know, the 2013 Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, so, Ken Pom has them at 10th. I got them at 17th. And I think there's a feeling, and this is where you watch games, right? So maybe they're just getting lucky. Maybe they're holding teams to some absurd 29% three-point shooting rate. But that's really not the case with this team. And when you watch this team, like, over the last 2 months, we've seen, like, kind of the average behavior of this team. Like, we can rely – this team can rely on its defense to win games, keep them in games, wait until they start hitting some shots. And, I mean, I think it's all legit, and I think it's been a great evolution of the Beeline team. And then the last two games, you've really seen their ceiling. So when they start hitting shots, they've hit almost 50% of their shots the last two games. You've seen that in the scoreboard. That's the ceiling for this team. And it's kind of scary for, you know, like a 1, 2, or 3 seed that – you know, they might see in the Sweet 16. This is not a team you want to play because of the shooting ability. Like, they've shot 36% from three for the season. I think that's below what you would expect.
You know,
for a team that's got Rock, Mo, and Duncan Robinson on it.
You know, because I picked them to win the Big Ten tournament based in large part on how well they're playing defensively.
People have been pushing back on you on their defense.
I was on the news show yesterday. So, man, this team is a really, really good defensive team. You know, they have the best bench in the Big Ten. I mean,
that's true, but that's more about the Big Ten.
but still, I mean, you look at the guys. I say you put them in other leagues, and I still would look at the guys they're bringing off the bench and say, these are guys that you feel when they come on the floor. These aren't just guys who come on the floor to eat minutes.
Well, there's two main reasons. Well, there's three main reasons where I think that Michigan's defense is legitimately improved. One, Xavier Simpson is a much better defender than Derek Walton.
That's true.
And Derek Walton obviously had him in some other areas, but like, nobody's been able to really get off on Xavier Simpson except Ryan McIntosh for some reason. Two, Mo took the advice he got from the NBA and really took it to heart, and now he is a really good defensive rebounder. Like, he went from a completely average guy who doesn't even hit 20 to a guy who's, I think, in the top 30 nationally in D-Reb rate. And number three, John Teske. John Teske's 10 to 15 minutes a game is a massive upgrade over Mark Denal's. And so I think that gets you, you know, a chunk of the way towards being a legitimately good defense after finishing like 69th last year.
I mentioned that exactly. I mean, you certainly have the Beeline talked about the foundation being laid over the course of time. He said, you know, they changed up defensive philosophy with his first big assistant turnover going to Val and BA. Then you take another, I think, big step in terms of mentality and emphasis with Billy Donlin last year. And then, of course, Luke Yaklich comes and takes that baton, and not only does he take that baton and run with it, but he has, to your point, some just flat out better individual defenders
for sure
that he's utilizing this year.
And Ace was looking up their stats on synergy, and they've pushed a lot of possessions to the post where they're bad. They're the 15th percentile in post defense, but that doesn't even get you to 1 point per possession because post possessions are not efficient possessions. You're only getting 2 points at a time. Often you're working with a guy who is just dribbling out the ball and then putting up a contested shot. And I think the game against Wisconsin was a great example of that. Michigan didn't double Happ. And Hap just put up shot after shot after shot after shot. Got like 20, 30 points. But he took 23 shots to get there. So it's really tough to outdistance a team like Michigan that's going to put up a bunch of threes on you. If all you're doing is trying to get a guy in the post a bunch of touches, and then usually those guys aren't very good free throw shooters either. So, you know, Isaac Haas is an exception, but Hap doesn't shoot very well from the line. So if you're fouling those guys, it's really not that big of a deal. So it's Michigan refuses to double the post, and so they're really good at preventing spot-up shots.
Yeah. Against some teams, they refuse to double the post. I think that's actually one of the go-tos. The thing that has impressed me most lately about them defensively is how multiple they can be.
That's true.
The different strategies that they can employ to change things up, whether it's doubling the post, whether it's going 2-3. You know, there are a few things that they do that to stem tides when they start to rise.
They're a much more varied defense. So, you know, Michigan used to hard hedge all the time, and that was a disaster because you know the hard hedge is coming. It doesn't really do much to you, and it gets your bigs in foul trouble. But now Michigan hard hedges like 3 or 4 times a game, maybe 5 times a game, and it destroys the flow of the opposition offense because they can't predict when it's coming. So the ability to switch to a 2-3 zone against Penn State once Tony Carr – figured out exactly what he could do against Xavier Simpson after Simpson erased him in the first half. Like, they had a version of it that was real wide and wasn't going real well, and then they had a version of it that was much tighter, and that really did a great job. So they've obviously been spending more practice time on it, and they've obviously got some...
Thanks to Billy. That's a Billy special right there.
But let's talk about Billy real quick, right? Because he went to Northwestern, and they had the 25th best defense by my numbers last year. They're down to 97th. Big reason in their drop-off this season. So I think it just says that we gotta give credit to our players and what Simpson's been able to do, what Teske's been able to do.
Well, and hiring Yaklich was a really smart hire because, like, what does Michigan have? They have guys who aren't great athletes relative to their level of competition. And so what you want to go do is you want to go find someone at a lower level who's really made that work. And Donlin was that guy at Wright State, and Yaklich was that guy at Illinois State.
Yeah, and there's no question that they began emphasizing defense more in practice with Billy. I mean, that is absolutely the case. So,
because he asked for practice time, right? Isn't that the story?
He asked for practice time, and Beilein gave it to him. it's something that stuck, and it's going well. Craig, what did you have?
Yeah, there's a couple other things. I mean, I agree with the three things that Brian stressed, but there's two others. One is that somehow over the course of the season, Michigan has managed to get Duncan off the perimeter and more as a post defender, and that has worked very well.
It sure has.
And it allows him to, you know, because we need him to make threes, we need him in the offense, but he was such a liability on the perimeter, but he's not in the post, and he's improved. The other one that hasn't been mentioned is Charles Matthews, who I think is a very flexible defender who can guard a lot of different kinds of guys and is a very good defender. And so I think there's really five things, the three that Brian mentioned in those two, and of course the flexibility in the defense. The defense I don't think is fluky in some sense, because of the point Ed pointed out, is that teams are shooting slightly above average against us from the three, and I agree with Pomeroy and Brian, I believe that three-point shooting is largely random, at least in to some extent.
Well, it's way more random than people think, right?
So way more random, right?
Yeah.
And so the fact that that isn't an outlier number, the fact that it's an ordinary number would imply to me that the defense is good and is sustainable.
Well, it actually suggests that they could actually get better.
Well, the other thing is that Michigan doesn't allow very many threes to get launched at all. So that was a focus under Donlin, and that's a focus under Yaklich.
And that's something that Pomeroy has stressed, and I agree with. The other thing that's interesting about this team is its profile is quite unusual. I mean, we all expect a Beilein team to not turn the ball over very much, but we don't expect, and we've mentioned this before, a Beilein team to be good on the defensive boards. And this team is number 2 in turnovers and number 23 in defensive rebounds. And I went hunting around to see what other teams have such a profile. And this year, at least, there's none in the Power Five conferences. Now, St. Joe's and St. Mary's are sort of in the same range. St. Joe's might be the closest, but they're not playing the level of competition, and they're not playing the sorts of teams that want to pound the offensive glass. The only other team that's even vaguely close, and they're not nearly as good as Gonzaga, who again plays a much weaker schedule. So one of these days I'll go back and see if I can find teams in other years that meet this profile. But this is a really unusual profile, not just for a Beeline team, but for any college basketball team to be very good at those two arenas. I know that Brian thought that was a little fluky early in the season, but it slid a bit, but it's pretty much maintained.
Well, Michigan's entered the Big Ten season with good defensive rebounding numbers before and have that kind of slide.
Right.
But this year, they might be number two now, but they've been number one or number two in the league, in league play, in defensive rebounding, which has never happened under Beeline.
We got to get to a break real quick. We'll come back on the other side, dig more into it, talk about the matchup with Iowa. This is a team they're facing today that we've been talking defense all hour, right? Iowa plays literally no defense. I mean, it's like it doesn't exist. They don't. There's no effort. There's no strategy. They're just there. That's what it seems like anyway. We'll get into that on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. So Michigan faces Iowa today, and I said this when it was, you know, Ira and I talked about this game this morning. One thing I can guarantee, Michigan's going to get some open looks. They're going to get a ton of open looks today. It just boils down to whether or not they're in the same rhythm. They can maintain the rhythm they've been in and knock down their open shots. If they do, I think they'll win this game comfortably.
Well, I hate it when Michigan plays zone, like when they play a zone.
Mm-hmm.
And Iowa switched to the zone for the Michigan game last time, and Michigan had 5 points at the under at the first media break.
You don't think that their zone offense has improved, though?
I mean, it has improved, but excuse me. It has improved, but it's just it takes a lot of the flow out of the offense. There's a lot of passing around the perimeter. And in that Iowa game, Michigan shot Iowa out of that zone eventually because Duncan Robinson was hitting NBA threes. And, like, you can do that. I just don't know. Like, it just makes me nervous.
See, I really feel like their zone plan, I just feel like we've seen them do more, whether mid-post flashers, they've done a better job of dribbling into the zone as well. Beeline, a lot of teams just, you know, like you say, pass it around the perimeter and chuck up shots. But I think he has really emphasized attacking the zone with the bounce, attacking it in the middle with mid-post flashers. They've converted that with varying efficiency, of course. But the plan is what I'm talking about. We've seen the plan be there and result in, I think, some pretty good opportunities.
I just it's a high variance solution for Michigan because they're going to shoot a lot of threes against this zone. I think you need to play Jordan Poole a lot. I think you need to play Duncan a lot because those are your two guys who might be able to rise up. You know, Matthews isn't a rise up 3-point shooter. Simpson isn't a rise up 3-point shooter, and I think that kind of makes Michigan a little bit vulnerable. The good thing is that Iowa has gone from about 248th in KenPom in defense to 259th. After adopting the zone, so they've gotten worse.
Our teams that play worse defense than Iowa, that's really what I'm taking out of it.
There's 100 of them.
There's 100, exactly.
They are freaking terrible
from the Southlands Conference.
Yeah, it's true. All of those teams have centers that are 6'4". But Michigan should win this game and fairly comfortably. But that's kind of the one thing that gives me pause because Iowa can score. The other thing that you're really kind of going to look at is Tyler Cook. So he went off in the first game, and then the second game, he was matched up against Duncan Robinson largely in the post, and Duncan Robinson held him to 10 points.
Yeah, he didn't take many shots.
Turned him off.
Limited his attempts, and I'm like, dude, this is that was maybe the revelation game for me with Duncan.
Yes, because he had just gone 4-for-7 in the previous game against Ohio State. He lights it up from 3 in that game, and he beats a guy up on defense. And everybody's like, huh.
See, to me, and I wonder what you think on this, Craig. I think Cook is their X factor. I don't think, Bohannon had a big game for them last night. I just think that Michigan's backcourt. They're you know, from Xavier Simpson is obviously a plus defender. I think Muhammad Ali Abdul-Rahman is an underrated. He's underrated in everything he does, but I think he's an underrated defensive player. I do not think that Bohannon is going to be able to get the open looks that he got last night. Garza will probably be Garza. He was good against Michigan in the last game. He was good last night. Cook is the guy that I think that they're going to try to emphasize. I think they're going to try to assert today in this game. If Michigan holds him in check again, I think they blow him out. I'm not counting on them holding him in check. But I just think their defense is so porous that Michigan, I do believe, will win comfortably.
Yeah, everything you guys have said seems right on the mark to me. Yeah, and Tyler Cook, I think, had 15 or 16 shots in the first game. He only had 8 in the second, and Duncan did a great job on him. But Garza, for some reason, maybe that was intentional, was wide open that whole game. I think he was 10 of 14 from the floor, and he did hurt us. The Iowa is not a terrible offensive team, but they do turn the ball over a lot, and or at least they certainly have against us. And I couldn't agree more with Brian that it's a game where if Michigan comes out and shoots reasonably, they don't have to shoot great. But we've seen Michigan go on these long funks where nothing can happen. But as long as they shoot reasonably and hit a reasonable percentage of threes, they should win the game. Now, the other thing that I worry about is at times this year, I don't think Simpson has done a great job moving the ball against zones. And in fact, I think Brooks and maybe Simmons have done a somewhat better job of getting the ball moving against zones. But we'll see how that continues to go. But because you got to have Z on the floor checking Bohannon. Bohannon isn't going to get shots if Z's checking him. So I don't know. I see the game as one where if Michigan shoots it okay, if they move the ball, they should win the game.
And this could be a game where, you know, Simmons has 10 important minutes because, you know, you're going to have Bohannon off the floor for a period of time, and that's a good time to get Simmons in there. And Simmons is a guy who was an unassisted three-point shooter at Ohio because he had to be. And, you know, he's a guy who can raise up against, you know, we've seen it a couple times down the stretch where he feels it's not checked closely enough and he puts it up and it goes in. And, you know, hitting a couple of those, that could break a game open.
Correct. I mean, Ed, I don't expect you to have these numbers, you know, readily available, but I'd be interested to see if you could get them. Charles Matthews, you know, his efficiency off the bounce versus his efficiency scoring, you know, off of off-ball action, curling off screens, basket cuts.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that Synergy would have, right, Brian? I mean,
yes. We haven't looked at that specifically.
Yeah, I would.
You've mostly just been praying for him to hit a shot.
Be very interested to see the comparison there, because I just think that he is an inefficient off the dribble player, and I think he's going to be that for the rest of this season. They're trying to shake him out of his funk, and to his credit, he hit some shots.
He did.
Yeah, in the last game. Yeah. But I just think that's not a hill that you die on if you're Michigan with all the other offenses. And he's fallen down the priority list as far as the numbers that get called.
But we kind of knew that coming into the season, though, right, Sam?
We didn't know anything about him.
No, we did. I came in the first game, I saw Charles Matthews play. I was like, Sam, this guy can't shoot. And you're like, yeah, that's right. and then so he relies on getting the basket, and, you know, maybe he's not the most efficient doing that. I mean, I like his athleticism, and you like his, you know, potentially his ability to get to the basket and finish.
Two things that he'll have to work on in the offseason, his left hand and when he attacks the rim, attacking the rim with his head up, you know, the pass. You know, sometimes you drive to pass. You drive to kick. And rarely does he, I mean, you know, ironically, he drove and kicked to Xavier Simpson for a three. It's like, wow, you don't see that often, right? But that is clearly an anomaly for him. And teams play him that way. And, you know, there's someone waiting for him in the lane. If he beats his man to his right and he winds up shooting a contested shot, getting it blocked or turning it over.
Yeah, and he has this uncanny, curse where it seems like every time someone digs at him from the perimeter, it's a turnover and it's not a foul. And, like, I'm not saying that it is a foul. I'm saying that these guys who are kind of putting themselves in a position to get a reach-in foul are usually getting the ball. And that's something he's got to tighten up. But, you know, with his athleticism, you know, you kind of want him to go into that football mode where he just kind of picks it up and puts it under his arms for two steps and then explodes to the basket. And that's – I think this is Charles Matthews for the rest of the year, and then hopefully Beilein can get him to another level in the offseason.
You brought up a point in the break, Brian, and I think it's a very good one. I mean, ooh, have we seen them –
what did I say?
But you said we haven't seen him throw a lob to Charles Matthews all year.
Yeah, we haven't. We haven't seen the GR3 offense, and I don't know what exactly is going on there, but he's a guy who, like, they threw a lob to Duncan Robinson. Like, why didn't you try it with Matthews?
Right? You throw a lob to Duncan Robinson, and it's Stu Douglas a few years back. We can't get one for Charles Matthews?
Well, it's you know, it's a rim rattler, brings the crowd into the game, and it's also worth 2 points. So we should try that.
Yeah, we'll see. So, guys,
can I bring up another point about Rock, though?
Go for it.
And I agree with you that he's become a better defender. But I think that's been a big improvement, because I think 14 months ago we were talking about how they couldn't dribble drive to defend at all. Uh-huh. And we've seen an evolution in that, and that's why they're at where they are defensively right now.
So give me your picks, because I want to get into some hockey here. In the next segment, give me your picks for the Big Ten tournament. I mean, who wins the Big Ten tournament?
Purdue.
Why? Because of their path?
Well, just because I think Purdue's a really good team. And if the schedule this year was actually fair, I think Purdue probably wins a conference. So, you know, they had some bad luck late with some close losses. And you know, I think they'll shoot well, and I think they'll win because they're good.
I mean, I think they're a good team. I just... You know, maybe it's a function of who they played down the stretch, but I just felt like, you know, after Michigan, we saw them hit.
They hit a bit of a wall, it's true, but, you know, I still believe. I believe in Purdue.
Is that the first time those words have ever come out of your mouth?
Anybody's mouth, probably.
Probably.
How about you, Ed?
If you're a bet man, you got to say Michigan State's going to win this tournament. I think they're the best. I think they're the top two teams in the country, and... I think they would have the best odds to win.
Man, I think they can be exploited.
They can.
I really like Michigan in that matchup. I think the Cassius Winston is such a liability on the defensive end of the floor. He is playing on a, you know, in retrospect, talking about his decision, he made the perfect choice. Michigan State was the perfect place for him in retrospect. And I wondered how he was going to fare playing for Izzo. But Izzo put him on a team with shot blockers. You know, he gives him a ball screen basically every time down the floor. He runs him off some action, gets him some open threes. This is a classic offense for a guy that is limited athletically, in my opinion. So
yeah, and Michigan was able to take Jaren Jackson out of the lane, take their center out of the lane, and then won that matchup decisively in the first one.
So. Yeah, and so it's going to be interesting to see what if and Ira thinks that they're going to play Jaren Jackson at the five. If that matchup,
well, what I said was they in the last game they played, there were a fair amount of minutes that they showed us the lineup with Jackson at the five, Bridges at the four, Langford at the three, and I guess McQuaid was the two, and they showed up for a little bit more in that game, at least from me watching, than I had in the past. And I just, for them in certain matchups, it seems to make sense. They would be better off matching up against Michigan that way. It doesn't mean it'll help them win, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for them because they don't really have much guard depth. So if you're playing Matt McQuaid 30 minutes
a game. Well, that is definitely an issue in that they don't have – Brian's totally right. If he's hitting a shot, obviously it makes them a better team. But they don't have the depth in the backcourt to do that for an extended period of time. But if you're going to have Mo Wagner and Duncan Robinson standing outside the three-point line, are you going to have Nick Ward chasing him and Jaren Jackson chasing him, or are you going to have Jaren Jackson and Miles Bridges chasing him?
How long is Matt McQuaid going to get carded? Until he's like 60.
So I know the Michigan game may kind of obscure this about Michigan State, but I look at 2-point field goal defense adjusted for schedule, and Michigan State's first in the country.
It is.
Even playing McQuaid 30 minutes.
Michigan is so unique, though, because they pull those bigs, to Brian's point, out of the lane. And in the last game, you know, that was before Duncan was really hitting.
That's true.
And they were hesitant to help off him. Jaren Jackson had, I think, what, 5-6 blocks in that game?
Yeah.
And they were hesitant to help off who was ever at the four, whether it was Duncan or Livers. They have to not do it. Forget being hesitant. You can't do it when you play Michigan this time. And I just think whether you're playing Jackson at the five or playing them at the four, I don't think that he'll be the same factor as a help defender that he was in the last game. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, they could come out. Here's how it goes Michigan State's way. If they come out and they
two fouls on both Mo and Chesky in the first 2 minutes.
There you go. You come out and you're able to establish your guys in the post as opposed to Mo being established on the perimeter and getting those guys out of sorts and off the floor because they can't check him as he puts it on the floor or shoots the three. If they do that, Michigan State's able to do that. Then it's a different game. So, time will tell. One game at a time.
See. That would be the.
They have two games to go.
That'd be the Saturday game if they get.
Yeah, they have to beat Iowa and Nebraska to get to Michigan State.
Yeah. Man, what's the chance of that?
First one, probably good. I like Nebraska as a team.
I don't like Nebraska. I mean, we're going to beat Nebraska.
Nebraska is a very good team at home.
Well, I mean, Michigan
they're going to beat Nebraska.
That was a scheduled loss, kind of from the drop there. But
I agree. What are their 3-point defense numbers? If I recall, when they played Nebraska? That game, Nebraska was pretty high when they played.
Nebraska doesn't allow a lot of threes, and that's pretty much what I look at now, not how many, what percentage.
Right, but if you look at what percentage.
Unless you're Syracuse, which is the weirdest team in the country. So your highest battle hasn't been off the floor in like nine games.
They chase a lot less when you play in that
Nebraska
zone.
They do
not allow people to shoot.
They have three guys who are in the top 10 in minutes played nationally.
That's
which
pretty
is
typical.
Bonkers.
So, Craig, before we get to the break, who do you have winning the Big Ten tournament?
Michigan State. I mean, I think Carson Edwards is the best player in the conference and the hardest check.
He doesn't play for Michigan State.
Can you let him finish, man?
No, obviously.
He's got a point. He's Craig Ross.
Yeah. I think Carson Edwards is the best player in the conference. I like their bench. I like Matt Harms. So I understand Brian's pick, but I still say Michigan State is by far the most talented team in the conference. And coaching aside, I think they'll win the Big Ten tournament and they have a good chance to win the national championship.
So we'll see.
We'll see.
They've been in so many struggles this year. I just kind of feel like this is a Giddy Potts kind of year for them, but. Might be wishful thinking.
Yeah, I mean, they turn it over a lot. They played some close games. But you look at their lineup, they've got two lottery picks, two high lottery picks probably, and they've got three other guys who are probably going to play in the NBA. Well, so, I mean, that's the most talented team in the country.
Get Jaren Jackson in foul trouble. He got away with some fouls against Wisconsin that didn't get called.
Yeah, that's true.
Good luck.
You know, get him in some foul trouble. Let's get to a break, 9:46 on a Thursday morning. Come back on the other side, close things out with a little Michigan hockey here on the Michigan Insider. Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. So Big Ten tournament hockey at home.
Yes.
At home, right here.
You know Brian loves the on-campus stuff.
Especially for hockey. I mean, it was ridiculous.
That's what I mean, in hockey. You want the NCAA to go this route, too.
Hell yes. It is unbelievable that there's... Like, the closest regionals for this year's NCAA tournament are in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
That's a drive.
Philly.
That's a short drive, too.
That's the Midwest regionals in Philly. Is Philly actually, in the Midwest?
That's actually – well, according to Jim Delaney, it might be.
Touche. It's actually in Allentown, which is basically Philly. But
they're playing the NCAA hockey tournament in Allentown?
Yeah, Penn State is hosting. I'm like, Penn State –
in Allentown?
Yeah.
That
it's not at the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Arena, level. It's in the Allentown Arena?
Yes.
Weird.
Wow.
A lot of people show up?
So what happens is the NCAA sets ticket prices, and you have to pay them a certain amount of money to host the regional, and regionals usually lose money because they're idiotically placed in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Like, whoa, oh, man.
So, like, you know, I went to the Fort Wayne Regional, and that building was
– it was terrible. I was there, too. Yeah, it was terrible.
And it's not a huge building, and it's just like Fort Wayne's never going to host again. So,
and neither will.
Hopefully they don't have any more regionals after this at random places. But I've been saying this for years, and
I know this has been a wash, rinse, repeat conversation on this show for a while. But at least the Big Ten seems to have
after the playing in St. Paul and at the Joe and it not working out, to, you know, attendance wise. Partly because when they play in St. Paul, it's like Minnesota's not very good, and when they play at the Joe, Michigan and Michigan State aren't very good.
Well, it was,
which hurts too.
It was different before the realignment because there were like seven teams in the WCHA who were in Minnesota or very close to it.
Right, and all the teams in the CCHA were pretty proximal to Detroit.
So, like, the Final Five for the WCHA was actually a very treasured tradition that everybody in Minnesota loved, and they were irate when the Big Ten happened. And that's because, like, if you're in Minnesota and you're playing at the XL Center, there's one team within 500 miles of it, maybe two. So you just don't have the fan bases proximate to that arena to really get a lot of people there. So it's moving to home sites is a really good idea, and I'm glad they did it. I kind of wish that – you know, the semis and the final weren't one-off games, but best two out of three. But I'll take this format all day, every day over, you know, the sterile neutral site. Good news for Michigan is that they are pretty much in the tournament as long as they win one game this weekend, at least from my futzing around on the pairwise predictors, which is a really great accomplishment for a team that was one of the worst in the country a year ago. And they've done it without Will Lockwood, who leaves a very big hole in one of their top two scoring lines because he was one of their most dynamic players. You know, they took care of business against Arizona State for the most part. The thing that really concerns me is their penalty kill, which is terrible and seems structurally terrible. So there's a, you know, if you look at hockey analytics, shots from the blue line that are right in the center of the ice are actually really good shots. And Michigan seems to give those up almost on purpose on the power play. So it's a really passive box, and it's just kind of grim, and Michigan's tournament run is likely to be ended because they give up like three power play goals in one game. But there's no like outstanding team this year. There's no team that you look at and you're like, that team frightens me.
Do you also look at this as like a house money point of the season if they get that win against Wisconsin?
Yes, if they make the tournament itself is gravy, and I'm lying to myself. I know I will be terrified when the tournament comes around.
Well, the fan mentality will change, but
yeah. It's
the hindsight. So in June, you look back and say, well, it was a good season.
Yeah, I mean, going into the season, I was like, I hope they're on the bubble, and I hope they're on the right side of the bubble. And I think they've done better than that. I think they've played themselves off the bubble pretty much. So even if they do get swept by Wisconsin this weekend, which is not particularly likely, they'll have a decent shot of getting in. So
we heard from Mel yesterday. He made the point that these tournament tickets were not a part of the season ticket package. So if you want to get out and see some Michigan hockey, this is a great chance to really do that.
And it's spring break.
And it's spring break, well, so students aren't going to be around.
As I discovered when I bought tickets a little bit late, there's not that much left.
Really?
Yeah, there's some end zone stuff, but they've actually sold them. They priced them well at $25.
They didn't give you guys an option like ahead of time as a holder to buy your ticket?
They did.
And you just missed your deadline?
I missed it.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So,
well, you look at it, I'm curious your take on this. So, you know, they've lost one time in the last eight games, happened to be to Wisconsin, yeah. But they're playing well, man. What flipped the switch for them?
Well, I think it's just, you know, you get halfway through a season and you're like, is this good enough? And the answer is no. So Michigan did take it to another level in the second half of the season, and I think a lot of that is just, you know, getting the system in and learning the system, kind of like Donlin last year on defense, where there was a big uptick the second half of the year. Michigan is much more responsible than they were even in the first half of the season. You know, the thing that really jumped out at me from the Notre Dame game is that I think they gave up maybe one 3-on-2 type odd man rush all weekend, and they couldn't go 5 minutes without giving up a 2-on-1 last year. So getting that discipline in there and then having some other guys kind of like step forward. Like, I think the pass UF line has really become a solid scoring line. Quinn Hughes, Michigan is more adapted to the fact that he is a wild man in a good way. Like, he's a pirate. Like, he will plunge into the offensive zone first, which is really interesting for a 5'9 defenseman, and they're using that better. Did you have something to say, Craig?
Yeah, I just have a question. I mean, I don't, and maybe it's structural, but this is a team that's been a pretty good 5-on-5 team, particularly all year, really, but particularly the second half of the year.
Yeah.
But it's hard to figure out why we'd be number 47 out of 60 teams on the power play and number 55 on the penalty kill. And, I mean, is it mere structure? I mean, that seems somewhat unlikely to me, but you know more than I do about this.
I mean,
this.
The power play numbers
odd.
Don't really surprise me because Michigan does not have a lot of super talented guys. You know, you have Marody, you have Hughes, you have, and you don't have Lockwood anymore. But like Norris is not the kind of guy who's even though he's a first round pick, who's going to like light it up on the power play. So I think the penalty kill is a structural thing that they absolutely need to fix. Hopefully this offseason. I think the power play is just a reflection of Michigan's talent. They're they're grinders. They're playing pretty well. They score goals 5-on-5, but you know they don't have a TJ Hensick on this team.
Is this 14-year-old they got a commitment from? Is he that caliber of guy?
So he's so young that I like Google him, and it's like, you know, the sirens go off and the jail comes down and the guy from NBC comes out and he's like, "Why don't you take a seat?" And so I don't really know much about him.
Sparty? Did you know that guy's a Sparty?
I did not know. Chris Hansen. Yeah, Chris Hansen. So
you ever see the episode where they got the guy walking in the Buckeye hat? It was a hilarious episode.
Yeah, you got to
caught one. Wow.
You got to recruit him early when it's college hockey and Michigan's doing that. And they're trying to navigate the craziest market for players, I think, in college sports, because you have the OHL, you have 20-year-olds. It's quite intense. So, but win one this weekend, and I think they're in. Hopefully they can win two and then get to the semis and so forth and so on. Their ceiling is a 2 seed, and it doesn't matter because there are no local regionals. So we're going to be watching it on TV in all likelihood.
What are you talking about? South Dakota? Philly?
South Dakota and Philly.
Woohoo!
All right, folks. Well, that will do it for today's show. So Ed has Michigan State. Craig has Michigan State. Brian has
Purdue.
Purdue. I have Michigan. Ira.
I picked abstained. Purdue. No, I abstained, but you told me to pick one, so I went with Purdue. Got it. Partly not sound like a homer, and partly because they're probably going to win it.
All right.